This is part of the This Is Your Brain On series. This is your brain on fake news, which unfortunately I don't think is that much different than your brain normally. Because I think the smartest line I ever wrote was, in order to maintain our way of living, we must tell lies to each other and especially to ourselves. It's not necessary the lies be particularly believable, but merely that they be erected as barriers to truth. I don't know if everyone has heard of this, but having been a history buff ever since I was a kid, even when I was a kid, I knew that the Emperor Valerian was captured by the Persians. And after he was captured, he was tormented by them, and the Persian emperor made the Roman emperor into a human footstool, and he would put his feet on him, or he would stand on him to get on his horse, and he eventually killed him either by pouring molten gold down his throat or by flaying him alive. Dreadful. I've known this since I was, well, probably when I read it in Ripley's Believe It or Not when I was 7 or 8. And I just learned yesterday it's not true. It's probably not true. We don't actually know, but it's probably not true. There's only one historian who said that that was the case, and this was a Christian historian, and Valerian persecuted Christians, and the Christian historian had an axe to grind, which is that this is what happens to anybody who persecutes Christians. It is true that Valerian was captured by the Persians, but many historians have, contemporary historians, wrote that he and his troops who surrendered were basically turned into honored enemies who had a little village of their own and were left alone, except the engineers. Some of the soldiers became mercenaries, and some of the engineers built some projects. I think we hear a lot about fake news these days, but I think it's really important to remember, and I'm not saying there isn't a lot of fake news, because of course there is, but I think that it's really important to recognize that this is pretty much the normal state of human affairs. And, you know, 25 years ago now, 20, almost 30 years ago now, a friend of mine asked me to read, he wanted me to research the Northern Pacific, 1864 Northern Pacific Railroad land grant. And so he wanted me to look through all of the New York Times from about 1861, when they first started thinking about this, or 1862, whenever it was, through, let's say, 1885. So I scanned every New York Times for I don't know, 25 years. And this took me most of the summer, because it was so much fun to read all those old newspapers. And especially knowing a lot about what happened in the Civil War, it was so interesting to read contemporary accounts, which were quite often factually inaccurate. You later learn, and there is, of course, the fog of war. There is, you provide information, or you give what information you have, but you may not have full information. And then in addition, there is the great line by Henry Adams, which is, "The press is the hired agent of a moneyed system, set up for no other purpose than to tell lies where the interests are concerned." He said this more than 100 years ago. So, you know, it was really difficult for me to... Okay, so I understood, even when I was newly politicized, you know, in my early mid-20s, I understood that corporations are going to lie. I completely understood that if you get a press release from Union Carbide about Bhopal, they're not going to tell the truth. I understood that. I wasn't that stupid, even when I was younger, I was not that stupid. But it took me probably 10 years to finally accept that if the corporation known as Union Carbide is going to lie, why would it not be true also that the corporation known as New York Times lie? And I finally understood that Henry Adams quote. I'll tell you one more little bit about this that was kind of a funny story. I was reading, I can't remember the book. I think it was Norman Solomon. It was something about how the media will slur the truth at best. And I was in my car. No. I was reading it. I had just read that day the line about how any dictator that the United States likes is called a president. Any dictator the United States does not like is called a strongman. And then I happened to be in my car that day, and this is when Manuel Noriega had recently gone from being a president to a strongman. And I'm listening to an NPR account. I'm sorry, I was still young. Listening to an NPR account about that, and they called Manuel Noriega a strongman, which they had not done like 3 months previously. And I just pulled my car over to the side of the road, and I just had to sit there for a while and think about this, because it was just such a great example of what they're talking about, that there, you know, and I'd experienced this before. You know, I was around as an environmentalist in the 80s and 90s during the whole owls versus jobs debate, where we always hear, you know, it's spotted owls are costing jobs, spotted owls, because there was protecting spotted owls would harm the timber industry, which would cost jobs. But what nobody ever said is there were more jobs lost to raw log exports and to automation. That all through the 80s, the cut went up. But as the cut was going up, jobs were going down because of those two factors. Nobody talked about that. And, you know, this leads me to something I've said before that is just, that has always really struck with me, which is that R.D. Lang's Three Rules of a Dysfunctional Culture, or Dysfunctional Family, which also work for a dysfunctional culture. Rule A is don't. Rule A1 is Rule A does not exist. Rule A2 is never discuss the existence or non-existence. Rules AA1 or A2. So it was so interesting because I would talk to a reporter who was ignoring, who was writing about law, spotted owls versus jobs, and I would bring the statistics to this reporter, physically show them to the reporter, and the reporter would file another story a week later that said jobs versus owls. It was as though I had merely gone into his office and farted. No, he probably would have had more of a response if I would have done that. And you see this everywhere. You know, I saw yesterday two people arguing about the trans issue. And they were arguing about, one was saying that, you know, no matter what adults do, it's not a good idea to give children puberty blockers, and talking about the dangers that can come from this. And that's all fine, and for once I am not taking a position on that issue, although I often do take a position on that issue. But my point here is that the pro-trans person said at one point, it was just a delightful sentence, it was, I don't care about science, and I don't care about any of your arguments. And the point here is not, in fact, the trans issue. The point here is this is, in fact, the central motivator of most political discussion. This is the central motivator of global warming, where you see day after day, you see, oh, Costa Rica's is carbon neutral, or Nepal is carbon neutral, or Iceland is carbon neutral. And what they're ignoring is that almost all of their electricity comes from hydroelectric, and hydroelectric produces more carbon, more atmospheric carbon than burning coal. because dams are known as, quote, methane bombs. They produce just tons, literally, of methane. But let's not allow that science to interfere. Or when people talk about solar panels, they never talk about all the mining that goes into them. They never talk about anything associated with it. I just saw our news article yesterday, a news article, and this is real news, about how these people have this great idea that is going to help global warming, that they're going to use ice to cool buildings. They're going to freeze water or something, some liquid. They're going to freeze it during the night when electricity is cheaper, and then they will use that ice to cool the building during the day. I don't know if this person was not at school the day they talked about how there is no such thing as 100% efficiency. This is not actually, or we hear all the time, carbon capture. There's a great carbon capture scheme is going to save the world because they're going to capture carbon from the atmosphere, and then they're going to turn it into algae that they're going to burn. It's like, okay, ignoring everything else, this carbon just ended up back in the atmosphere again. So, fake news. Okay, I am not, by this, suggesting that we need to be so cynical that we disbelieve everything. What I am saying is that we need to joyfully disbelieve everything. And we need to say about everything, bullshit. Prove it. You know, I had an economics professor in college who once said, never believe anything you read, rarely believe anything you think. And the idea, again, is not to fall into just a sort of cynicism that says, oh, well, or a sort of nihilism that throws up your hands and says, well, it's all bullshit then anyway, so fuck it. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying to say it's all bullshit anyway, but to say that joyously, happily, and then to Andrea Dworkin talked about how if you are a writer, you must never, ever lie. You must attempt to tell the truth. And I've thought, I mean, the reason I am a writer is because my job as a writer is to attempt to articulate those things I know in my heart to be true, but to which I've not yet put words, and in so doing, help others to articulate the things they know in their hearts to be true, but to which they've not yet put words. And I also love this thing Charles Johnson, the writer, said about the writing he wants to read is where a writer is writing as though someone put a gun to their head and they said, I'm going to kill you as soon as you write the last words of the last sentence of the last paragraph of the last page of this book. Because if you write with the knowledge that this is the last testament you can ever make, there is an honesty that comes out. You know, there is a fallacy, there is a belief that Hitler, if someone displeased Hitler, if someone did not, you know, if Hitler would order someone to commit an atrocity and the person wouldn't do it, that Hitler would send them to the Eastern Front or have them shot. It's actually not true. The reason they did the atrocities is because they knew that if they went along with the plans, they got better jobs. And that's how these systems work. That's how these lies are printed in newspapers, is not because someone walks in with a machine gun and says, I'm going to shoot you if you write about raw log exports and automation. Instead, you are, there is a culture created. It takes us back to Upton Sinclair. It's hard to make a man understand something when his job depends on him not understanding it. And where I want to just sort of bring this all back to is that if the diagnosis is that there is fake news all around us that is heavily manipulated, the solution is to say bullshit to everything and to attempt to tell the truth the best you can. And, okay, I need to look something up, and this is what I want to end with. One of my heroes is the British jurist Lord Mansfield, who was the one who ended slavery in Great Britain. And he recognized that there would be extreme fallout from this, but he commented that they must end slavery, that, quote, justice should be done, though the heavens may fall. And the solution to fake news is that we must attempt to tell the truth, though the heavens may fall.